Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Peace.
Bliss.
Amen.
Amen. I'm going to start with a reading from David. This is December 1st from his book, My Spiritual India. Remembered Ram Nam to the end. Today a family was speaking of their father's death. Swami Satchidananda, did he suffer? Devotee, he did not suffer. He was in good health until the last day. He had loose bowels. We took him to the hospital where he died. Even though he did not recognize us, he was chanting Ram Nam till the last. His lips continued to move, always chanting. How wonderful that he remembered God even when he did not remember his own children. This could only be the result of a lifelong pattern of remembrance. Swamiji, it was good he came to the ashram just before his passing. It was like he knew it was coming, the way he said goodbye to everyone. Such a lovely attitude toward the transition of a soul from the earthly body to the heavenly one. Swamiji's room was filled with peace and joy. Equal vision. Last night, a Satya Sai Baba devotee was telling of a difficult bus ride to Bangalore. She wrote to Swamiji that it was like going from heaven at the ashram to hell on the bus ride. He wrote back 1.5 pages, she said in an agitated voice, to see all of my experience with equal vision. I interjected, oh, he is taking your vision higher. She shot back angrily, I don't care. Oh, Lord, you show me in so many forms how the ego gets in the way of complete surrender. Please bless me that I may put aside all anger, distaste, dislike, and surrender myself to you. You manifest such attitudes through others that I may clearly see the obstacles in myself. Thank you for your loving kindness. Respect for others. Yesterday, a father with a rebellious, angry 17-year-old son sitting next to him said, Swamiji, say how a boy should be in the family and as a student. Swamiji's answer, a child's first concern should be his studies to do his best. He should respect his parents and do as they ask. Then the father said, and when he gets angry, Swamiji, he should spend time praying to God. Then he won't get angry. Lack of respect for parents is common these days, and that happens to the teachers also. If there is no respect for the parents or teachers, then the child will have a difficult time. If you cannot respect others, life will be difficult. The parents should be devoted to God. If the child is to be spiritual, the parents must be devoted to God. The father nodded his head and the son listened intently. Swamiji had taken a special interest in this boy. On the same day the boy arrived, he had come to see Swamiji by himself. Later I heard the boy saying to the receptionist, he wanted to ask Swamiji questions so he could argue with him. The receptionist had said she wanted to be there to see that. Over the next week, I've seen what a wonderful influence Swamiji and the ashram have had on this boy, as he came to have great love and respect for Swamiji. The ascending subtlety of temptation. Since coming to the ashram, temptation has been searching me out. I went to Mother Krishnabai Samadhi Mandir and prayed that she should absorb and reunite me in the Divine Mother so that I would have no thought of anyone else. In response, she graced me with a movement upward in consciousness. I have gone through various levels of temptation. Each is familiar to me. The first temptation is the animal drive to have union with a woman with whom there's a sexual attraction. Once that is overcome, a second, more subtle desire arises, to be wanted and adored by another. Of course, each level of wanting some object on the outside corresponds with subtle or not so subtle energy that is found also in me. When these two temptations are transcended, then a third one comes in the form of seeing past connections and psychic attunement with the object of my desire. The final temptation comes from seeing what appears to me as the spiritual nature of the one with whom there is an attraction. Each of these attractions is delusive, not because the thought is necessarily untrue, but because every one of them takes me from the ultimate goal of realizing God. When these temptations are worked through, then the back of the delusive energy is broken, the beast dies. One must be wary of desire nature, who, like a villain in the movies, resurrects itself and springs back to life after is seemingly dead. A clear, uncompromising resolve must be had. The impersonal sword of wisdom must cut clear all sense of attachment. Jesus said that to even think of your neighbor's wife with lust is the same as committing adultery. This reflects the law of mind that states that a thought, the causal plane, is the beginning of creation. What we habitually think on, we create. Steadfastness. An important note, anytime sadhana, the search for truth, is about to deepen, the temptation of past habits and obsessions rise up to knock one off the path. Only the most steadfast attitude prevails during these times. Long experience on this path has revealed this hard-won lesson. Desire nature does not die easily. The question then comes, how long does the struggle last? Answer, it lasts exactly as long as it takes to completely purify the consciousness of all desire nature and attachment in the conscious and subconscious minds. One must cut off the life-giving energy of the mind's attention by giving all, surrendering all, and dedicating all at the feet of the Lord. By this means only does victory come about. Perhaps centuries, lifetimes of self-created attachment can be worked through by sincere devotion. Situations and individuals show up in life to give us the opportunity to work through past karmic attachments. At time, it is not necessary the same soul as in the past lifetime, but the one who comes to us resonates with the vibration of what needs to be worked out from the past. And finally, grace. It is only through the grace of the pre-existent, perfect Christ or Krishna consciousness within that desire nature is completely transcended. A clear, firm will is definitely needed, but grace completes the work. It may seem an overwhelming task, but there is only one thing that can save us. The perfect consciousness that already lives, that already resides within us. It is brought into our conscious lives by deep, persistent prayer and openness to it. It is not that grace withholds itself from us. It simply will not enter where it is not bidden. Many lifetimes spent focused on this world and the desire nature of the body have left this supreme consciousness dormant. One must pray ardently to invoke the superior divine will. Then and then alone will the resplendent nature of spirit shine forth through every particle of being for the sincere aspirant. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And from Papa, who teaches us that all we have to do is chant God's name to achieve that. Madhura, Chapter 6. Ram Dass remained in Rameshwaram for 2 days. The Sadhu Ram then, proposing a move, led him to the railway station. Catching a train proceeding further south, they reached a place called Dhanishkodi. On alighting there, the Sadhu Ram, the guide so kindly provided by Ram, walked in the direction of the sea, with Ram Dass at his heels. Ram Dass, who was always busy with the meditation of Ram, was feeling as though he was moving about in a dream. Ram, his sole quest, sole thought, sole aim. It was about 2 miles walk to the spot on the seashore where legend declares Sri Ramachandra built the celebrated Setu or bridge during his excursion to Lanka. Oh, so it's Rama and Sita. Halfway on the sands, it began to drizzle. The season was cold, clothing was scanty, but Ram's kindness and grace were very great. Going down to the extreme south of this projecting piece of sandy land, both bathed in the sea. Next, the Sadhu Ram and Ram Dass went to a small temple close by where they had the darshan of 2 sadhus permanently residing there. A brisk walk back to Dhanishkodi brought them to the Dharmashala where the Sadhu Ram provided Ram Dass and himself with some food. Ram Dass was at this time only on a fruit diet, or food without salt and chilies. After a day's stay there, they started by train for Madhura and reached the place in due time. The temple of Madhura was visited. The temple of Meena Akshi is a beautiful pile wherein the sculptor has exhibited all his skill. The life-size symmetrical images cut in stone seem to be stepping out of the broad pillars that support the upper structure of the temple. The shrine is massive in build and can stand the wear and tear of ages. The sight of it is, in brief, a most imposing one. Here Ram Dass met again Swami Govindananda, who was so kind to him at Rameshwaram. He, with 2 other saints, found Ram Dass sitting on one side of the entrance to the temple. The tired Sadhu Ram, Ram Dass's guide, was sleeping, and Ram Dass was squatting at his feet. In sleep, the Sadhu Ram's legs happened to touch Ram Dass's body. Swami Govindananda remonstrated at this and was about to shake up the Sadhu Ram, when Ram Dass addressed the Swami, "Maharaj, please don't disturb the Sadhu. He is sound asleep." "Behold," cried the Swami, "he is kicking at you. I cannot bear the sight. I consider it nothing short of sacrilege." "Swamiji, it is all right," replied Ram Dass. "His feet are holy. He is Ram Dass's guru. He is Ram, so no harm anyway." The Swami said he could not quite understand Ram Dass, whom he held in high reverence. Next day, the Sadhu Ram proposed a move from the place. Before doing so, he told Ram Dass that his duty, insofar as guiding him to Rameshwaram was concerned, was over, and he should be permitted to part from him in order to proceed to his Gurusthan at Rajam Ananda Gudi. All along, the Sadaram had been very kind to him and had looked after him very tenderly at all stages of the journey, taking every care of him. At a certain railway junction, he left Ram Dass. However, before doing so, he assured Ram Dass that the train was carrying him to Chittambaram, a noted shrine. And from Swami Muktananda's notes. From here we move to the sixth chapter, Madhura. When we first read this chapter, two things came to our mind. See him in creativity. Creativity is an expression of God. One is that he was explaining about the architectural beauty. Then we started thinking, what does he, Papa, mean by that? Architectural beauty is not divorced from God. It is a creative thing that he has given. On an ordinary granite stone or a rock, if God wills, he can bring out something that will stand for centuries, which will be a source of perennial inspiration and joy for innumerable devotees and visitors, not necessarily only devotees. God does not differentiate between a visitor and a devotee. For him, everyone is his child. That is why Papa was elaborately explained about it. Connect ourselves with God through creativity by remembering that it is he who was motivated and brought it about. Those who have visited the Madurai temple, they will see it. It is a class by itself. Unlike today, it must have been done only with manual chiseling. What an amount of concentration is necessary. Dedication is necessary. Perfection is necessary. Commitment is necessary. All has been given by him. So the moment we see this architectural beauty, we naturally connect ourselves, initially with the person or Raja King only who did it, then with God who motivated and brought it out as a source of perennial inspiration. And the second thought, to see God in all. Another point Papa brings out is that we should see God in everybody. We all say that, but here, through a wonderful incident, he is trying to make us understand this. God will test you. Sadaram was lying down and he was dozing, probably. Papa was sitting near and the Sadaram's leg, which happens to touch Papa. So another Swami, who was also sitting there, couldn't see this because for him, Papa was a highly evolved soul and the other man was a lesser evolved soul. Even otherwise, he should not touch. So he got offended. Immediately, Papa said, don't disturb him. Immediately, the Swami responded, no, 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 this is something I cannot tolerate. All are forms of God, explained Papa. Through this, he is teaching us that we should start from the tiniest, not the grossest. When we see a Mahatman, we go there. We take fruits, this and that. These are all the grossest forms. We prostrate before him. We offer a mala to him. We take his padatirth, etc. Okay, but when you come back to your own place, your own seat, there God tests you. Don't neglect that. You should be equally concerned about it. He, the Sadaram, see him. Not merely the Devi in the temple, but also in the sadhu who is tired. And I would say everyone around us. Not just those who are in the temple. He will not knowingly do it. He, the Sadaram, had great love for Papa, great affection for Papa, care for Papa. See the level of Papa's thinking and what he is teaching us. We keep on remembering, it is a manual. And in that, Swami Muktananda is saying that In Quest of God is a manual of how to live. In our house, in our office, there are many, so many people doing, according to us, lesser important things. Everything is important, but we may consider some things as lesser important. So there is no lesser important. Nothing is irrelevant. Nothing is unimportant. Nothing is insignificant. This is the powerful message from this chapter. Hari Om. Summarizing, we see him in creativity. Creativity is an expression of God. Connect with God through creativity by remembering that it is he who has motivated and brought it about. And see God in all forms. Chapter 7. Chidambaram is the place. Chapter 7. At noon, the train steamed into Chidambaram station. Ram Dass stepped out on the platform. He was now without a guide. Ram had made him a child, without plans, without any thought of the next moment, but with his mind ever fixed in the one thought of Ram, Ram. He found some pilgrims proceeding toward the city and followed them. At midday, he reached the precincts of the temple of Chidambaram. He went up straight to the entrance of the temple, but could not gain admission as none was allowed to get in without a payment of anna's four, the entrance fee. He was without a single pie, which, however, he did not at all regret. He wandered for a time amid the ruins surrounding the temple, and after bathing in one of the many tanks, seated himself on a long stone in the sun in a secluded portion of the ruins. It was now about 1 o'clock. Ram Dass, who was all the while absorbed in the Ram Japa, opened a small bundle of books and, taking out the Bhagavad Gita, commenced reading it. He had not perused half a dozen verses when he found a stout Tamalan coming toward him and taking a seat behind him. "Maharaj," he inquired, "may I know if you have taken any food for the day?" "No," replied Ram Dass, "but Ram provides. No fear so far, no thought of it. You remind me, friend." "Can you tell me what kind of food you take?" next asked the friend. "Plantains, if you please," Ram Dass rejoined. At once the friend got up and disappeared, and in a short time returned with a dozen plantains, and laying them in front of Ram Dass, pressed him to eat. "Oh, Ram, thy ways are wonderful." They passed over, and the Tamalan, who was sent by Ram Dass himself to look after the wants of his humble servant, next asked Ram Dass to follow him. At the entrance of the temple, he paid Anna's 8, the entrance fee for both, and took him inside the temple. After the darshan of the idols, he showed him the whole interior of the temple. One rarity here is the roof of the central building of the temple is covered with sheets of gold. The guide furnished by Ram was very kind to him. There was that night puja in the temple in a grand style, and also a procession attended by thousands. When all this was over, it was past midnight. The Tamalan friend secured for Ram Dass a place for spending the night. Here he made Ram Dass understand that he was only a pilgrim come there to attend that night's puja and procession from a neighboring town, and that he intended to return by the early morning train, and that he was much blessed by Ram Dass's society for ever so short a time. Ram Dass's heart was too full for words. Ram's kindness was indescribable. Next morning, along with other pilgrims, Ram Dass came to the railway station. But where to go and by what train? He was entirely in the dark. His imaginative facility for making plans and seeking information was totally absent. Without a guide, he was feeling helpless. He depended for all things on Ram, who he was remembering every moment of his existence. On reaching the station, he found a train standing, but did not know whence it had come and whither it was proceeding. He straightway went up to the gate and was entering the platform when the ticket clerk barred his passage, telling him that he should not enter without a ticket. It was all Ram's will. Ram did not want that he should travel by this train. Probably it might be running toward a direction where Ram Dass would come across no places of pilgrimage. Ram knew best. Repeated tests from God, a necessity. This is from Swami Muktananda's lessons. Tests are a means to assess what has been assimilated. We were mentioning acceptance, equanimity, etc. It is not a one-time test. It has to be regularly tested. Just like we take food regularly, just like we go to the toilet regularly, just like we take baths regularly, these also should be tested regularly. One test he, Papa, has passed does not mean he has passed forever. Think. So that is why throughout these 37 chapters, we will find these tests often coming. Why tests are needed. You know from the first form, which is the same as first grade, previously it was the first form, second form, now standard, first standard to 10th standard. Do you think there is only one test? Each year there are three tests and then 10th, so on. So 30 to 40 tests are given to ensure that what is assimilated has been assimilated. So like that, there also he, Papa, was tested and passed the tests cheerfully. All the way he had gone to Chittarambam to get darshan, and he was denied entry as four annas were necessary for the admission, which he did not have. Was there any grumbling or complaining? No, absolutely none. So the regular need for tests, generally we think, I have done 10 malas yesterday, so I don't have to bother about it today. It is not like that. We may also think on the following lines and be satisfied. I have heard this Mahatma. I have had darshan of that Mahatma. I have taken initiation directly from Papa. I have seen Papa. I have talked to Mataji. I have seen Swamiji. No, no, no. At that moment, you may have had some benefit, but have you been in a position to sustain it? That is why regular tests are given by God. This is very, very important. And most of you have heard this story, but when I met Swami Satchidananda the first time and there was a satsang time with him, and he asked if anybody had any questions, and I asked Swamiji about sadhana and how to do sadhana. And he said, sadhana is like you're going through the woods and you're going on a nice walk, a fine walk, and something out of the corner of your eye catches your eye and you look down to see what it is and you can't quite tell, but there's something out of the ordinary. And so you pick at it and see that there's the edge of something, a corner. And you pick at it and you pick at it and start to see it's maybe made of metal. It's not dirt. It's not a natural thing. And so you keep digging and you find that it's actually a brass cup, but it's quite tarnished and quite dirty. So you scoop it up and take it home. And when you get it home, you clean the dirt out and you realize it's quite a nice little loda, a little bowl. And so after cleaning the dirt off, you start to clean it and polish it And pretty soon it starts to shine because you've been working on polishing it so much. And you finally get it to a nice shiny state and you set it up on your mantelpiece. And if you continue to shine it and continue to clean it each day, every day, it will remain that way. But if somehow it's on your mantle and then you bring something else new home and you put it in front of it, and pretty soon it ends up at the back of your mantle and you don't even notice it anymore and it starts to get tarnished, and pretty soon it's all completely tarnished and dark and covered with dust, and that's what can happen with our practice. And so the idea is that we have to keep that loadable, polished and shined up once or twice a day to keep it in that state. And Swamiji said that at some point we polish it, and if we polish it with enough love and enough tenderness, that God will turn it to gold and it will tarnish no longer. Another thing that Swamiji told me, and this was on my next trip to the ashram, I said, you know, I've come here with all devotion and left everything behind. And I feel like if ever I'm going to dive into the ocean of God, this is it. And I'm ready to surrender everything and to sacrifice everything. And I was with tears streaming down my face and complete devotion and desire to know God completely. Swamiji said, yes, wonderful. Now do it again. Now do it again. And if with each breath, each moment, you feel that same level of commitment and sacrifice, then you will have God. And so those were his two big directions for how to do sadhana, how to know God like Papa does. And that in singing God's name and chanting God's name, it makes our desire for God grow deeper because we start to feel the sweetness of God at all times. When we sing God's name, it connects us to God in a way that's simple and sweet and really easy. That's the thing about Papa's path that I think so many of us enjoy, that Mother's shown us that the mystical crucifixion is the way that we must go. But Papa has added the sweetness to it by giving us this God's name to sing while we're walking this difficult path. It's a very special combination that they've given us. So back to Swami Muktananda's second part of this chapter. As we get more and more attuned with the ideal, thoughts about our bare necessities also recede. Then God, in his mysterious way, provides and takes care. Of course, we don't know how far it will be possible, but in his Papa's case, we remember he was able to raise himself from the barest necessity level also. We can surmise the more we get attuned with the ideal, it will become a natural process. When you are in a natural process, God in his own mysterious way provides. He, Papa, had not taken any food. He had not entered the temple. He had only taken his bath and sat on a rock. But somebody came from nowhere, an unknown person, and asked him if he has eaten any food. Papa responds saying no. Then bananas were given, fruits were given. Papa was also taken around the temple. He, the person, paid the entrance fees and took him into the temple and all those things. Papa was unconcerned even about the basic necessity, food. How do we reach that stage? Only when we attune ourselves to the idea totally is it possible. Otherwise, it will be difficult. But we can try to reach the ideal. The ideal should occupy the whole of my mind so that the necessity will also come up in my mind. And when someone reminds you, you will respond. So the ideal should occupy my mind completely. Probably many of us would have also experienced it when we are deeply involved in any particular work. We put in our whole souled attention to achieve the ideal, to complete a particular task. But there does not become a part of our lives because it is available only when a particular work is there. And that particular work, 99% of it might be selfless, but 1% of it will be selfish. As we may feel, it is my job. I am doing it. So at that time, you might have shifted the necessity to the backyard. That is the reason we have not been able to hold on to it, but it will definitely help. Let us keep thinking about it. So these are the points that come up. Assimilate it. Kindly note it down. Don't just hear it. Kindly note down. Take a book and note down. Whenever we have heard now from Papa, that also we will note down and see whether anything additional is there. That also we will note down. That is a Pukka in-depth study, not a hearing study. If we note down the points, we will know to what extent we have been able to imbibe the sublime teachings contained in this wonderful classic. May he enable us to do so. Was thinking of how many people have had those what feel like magical or serendipitous situations when Papa's involved, where we think of something or have a desire for something and it gets magically fulfilled. And if we can use that same innocence and desire to wish for our God realization, to hope, to know that it's waiting for us, that God will provide everything that we need, that it will come to us. To have that faith of a child. We've all had children around that in an impossible situation, they say, I'm hungry, and look at the mom. And there's no way that there's any food available, but they look at the mom with complete expectancy that if they're hungry, they'll be filled. And how often does the mom root around and find something when there's no food to be had? But God does no less for us when we have that expectation. Anybody have any comments or questions about these teachings, about Papa's story? We'll take a break next week.
Well, Jill, I was very happy to hear that first story of yours because I have never heard it before. I've heard you tell the second one a number of times, but I've never heard the one with the little Lota. And it's a pretty wonderful story. And I haven't heard Swamiji tell that story to anybody else either. So really, really lovely one. And
we were sitting in the outside, before it was a covered space, outside of where you stayed, Kate, when you had your bad knee, I think it was.
It's always been covered, yeah.
Yeah, that sitting area.
Hmm.
And it was like a 3 o'clock afternoon satsang, and he asked if anybody had any questions, and that was mine.
Oh, very nice.
Mm-hmm. A silly memory that fits with this too, that I was doing silence and seclusion at the ashram for a day or two, and was in my room, and like Papa had the thought of, in one of his stories he talks about having the desire to have a biddy, a smoke, and he's out in the middle of the jungle, no one is anywhere, and suddenly this person appears out of nowhere, walking down the path, and walks up to him and hands him a cigarette and keeps going. And I had been in probably 6 hours or something in meditation, and kept having this disturbing thought of wanting cashews. For those of you who don't know, cashews are grown in the area where the ashram is, and kept thinking about cashews, and everyone knew I wasn't supposed to be disturbed, and all of a sudden there's this knock, knock, knock on my door, and I open the door, and there's Bruce Stevenson standing there, hands me a bag of cashews and closes the door. So I always think of that when my immediate thing is, no, I meant I want God realization. Oh, I don't want to waste my wishes on cashews, but the mind can be so distracted. You silly things. But God will fulfill all of our desires. Remember David talking about that, of, you know, there's, for someone who wants to be the richest person in the world, they'll have many, many incarnations, because there's only one person at a time that gets to be the richest. And so it takes quite a while for things to stack up. So we have to see that our desires are fulfilled and create that deepest desire for God. And thinking about how God tries to make us understand just how sweet He is. Devotee knows how sweet thou art. So we will desire Him alone.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
This day is almost gone.
This day is almost gone.
When night and morning meet.
When night and morning meet.
It will be only an unalterable memory.
It will only be an unalterable memory.
So let no unkind word.
Let no unkind word.
And careless doubting thought.
And careless doubting thought.
No guilty secret.
No guilty secret.
No neglected duty.
No neglected duty.
No wisp of jealous thought.
No wisp of jealous thought.
The cloud is passing.
The cloud is passing.
Now, in token of our deep and abiding love,
in token of our deep and abiding love,
we would lay aside, all disturbing thoughts,
all disturbing thoughts,
all misunderstandings,
all misunderstandings,
all unworthiness,
all unworthiness.
If things have gone wrong,
if things have gone wrong,
let none of us,
let none of us,
lift an accusing finger.
Lift an accusing finger.
Who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
Is not important.
Is not important.
Only,
only,
how shall we set the situation right?
How shall we set the situation
and
right?
And so, serving and being served.
Serving and being served.
Loving and being loved.
Loving and being loved.
We shall make this
a
peaceful heaven. where we, the children of God, shall live harmoniously, joyfully singing His name and glories, till we merge our little selves in His eternal being and existence. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
The sun shines for others, the trees bear fruit for others, the rivers flow for the good of others, the cows yield milk for others. Human birth is likewise meant for doing good to others. Love gave us willing, caring hands to perform some helpful deed. Love gave us sympathetic words to answer someone's need. Love gave us soft hearts to aid another along the way. Love gave us smiles and laughter to brighten someone's day. Love gave us all these treasured gifts for helping one another. Love works through us all so that we care for each other. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram.
Hari Om.
Hari Om. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill.